From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 732, Enterprise Mobility in the Pandemic with guest Richard Hicks, recorded Friday, September 18th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit SoundThoughtsLLC.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing back a regular for one of the pandemic series, my friend Richard Hicks, who's a Microsoft Cloud and Data Center MVP, more than 25 years in information technology industry, and I know as a fact is the person that Microsoft people check on when they have to ask VPN questions. Because I had exactly that point. I was talking to a Microsoft person not that long ago about VPN. And I said, well, I just checked Richard Hicks's site and he says, do it like this. I'm like, you make the product, but you still check with Richard.
It's a funny thing, isn't it? Richard, I will tell you, and by the way, thanks for having me on the show again.
Anytime.
And also, where is it that I get my Run As Radio stamp card punch?
Yeah,
is
you're somewhere you're getting on up there. What are you about?
I'm almost up to a free episode, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Something like that. Or at least a sub sandwich.
That's right. I can tell you, Richard, that it is interesting and somewhat humbling, I guess. My inbox is flooded with people from around the world asking questions about the technologies that I'm an expert in. And I'm always intrigued when I see one that is from at Microsoft.com. And I think, that's interesting, right? and it might simply be a contractor or a consultant, somebody from MCS or something like that. But I look at this and I think, you have access to way more information than I do, right? So, but it is interesting. I think at the end of the day, practical experience is crucially important.
You're the one working in the field, and so I'm sure they appreciate the way you approach this. Oh, I have to tell you another story. It's a little bit of a sideline. The show we're about to make, I asked you for, right? I mean, very early on in this pandemic series, I reached out to you and said, hey, I'm really concerned about VPNs during the pandemic, and you were all over it. I think we made a great show 5-6 months ago, and it hit me a little while ago. It's like, wow, here we are, 6 months into this as IT folks, like, how are we doing? And so I quickly rattled off an email. We've known each other for years. Hey, Rich, what do you think? Should we be revisiting this right now? So here's the story part. Sent to the wrong Richard Hicks. Turns out there was a Richard Hicks who's a listener over on the .NET Rock side. And I had sent him a copy of Music to Code By and stuff, right? So, and I didn't even look. So I just fired this off. And of course, I'm very, very familiar. You and I have known each other for years, right? Mm-hmm. And this fellow, very a kind student, really, had only interacted with me around the winning the prize. And he was like, I hope I haven't misrepresented myself, but I really don't know that much about VPN. So I'm like, wait, that's okay.
So the response was like,
I'm like, no, you're wrong, Richard Hicks. I'm sorry.
Wow.
Just reset it. So I hope he's listening because he were very kind to me when I sent the mail wrong. You did nothing wrong. I sent it the wrong Richard Hicks.
That's awesome. Yeah, I know for a fact that Outlook autocomplete can bite you. You've gotten a few emails that I have tried to copy myself on.
Oh, right, because we're both Richards.
Yours came up in the autocomplete. Yeah. I have,
And I think we all have empathy for that. You just sort of, I don't think you mean me. And that's gotten a particularly embarrassing where I've like one of my sponsors has had a conversation about me with another Richard inside the company and ended up on that.
Yes.
I'm like, I don't think you meant to send that to me. anyway, I mean, I'm sure you've had an amazing 6 months. Like you were in demand in March and April when we talked. But has it gotten better or worse? Like, where are you at? If everybody got it stable, or are people still fighting to scale VPNs enough?
So I think it's a bit all over the map at this point. Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right. When March hit and everybody started to close down globally, not just here in the US, but globally, that's when people's infrastructure started to fall apart, or simply just got exposed for, you know, lack of proper maintenance or configuration, mm-hmm. or just not enough capacity and those types of things. And my phones lit up, my email inbox was hashed, and I was extremely, extremely busy for many, many months, probably 3 months solid. Mm-hmm. 6-7 days, you know, mornings, evenings, customers around the world, Europe, UK, Australia, New Zealand. So, you know, my day was pretty full. I was in the mornings with my East Coast and you know, Europe, UK customers, and the afternoons and evenings with my Australia, New Zealand customers.
Yeah.
So it was, those were some long days. And I'll be honest with you, it started to settle down, probably quiet down a little bit in June. And I remembered one day without anything on my calendar. It was the first time in months, and it was awesome, and it was great to take a breather. And then I had this this thought that, you know, what's going to happen now? I'm not going to see a dime for 3 months now. Yeah. Everybody has kind of burned out on this. I fixed everybody's problems. Yeah. Anybody that was probably going to come to me that had a fire to put out has been put out, and I'm probably not going to see any work now for months. Right?
Yeah, take your summer off.
Right. Yeah. So like, you know, this was a peak, and now I'm going to have this valley, mm-hmm. but that never happened. I'm actually busier at this point than I have been at any point in the 5+ years that I've been consulting independently.
Wow.
So, and I think the reason for that is that, the COVID has definitely exposed IT for a shortcoming, that was overlooked for many years. And that is that, enterprise mobility is not a luxury anymore.
Interesting.
It used to be in the past. I think supporting mobile workers was a special use case, and a lot of organizations, especially those that didn't have a lot of field-based services, so organizations with sales folks or people that have to go on site with customers, construction, insurance adjusters, those types of things that need to work in the field. Outside of them, an organization with a traditional brick and mortar building didn't really support mobile work, right? If you couldn't come into the office, you just didn't work that day. Right. Those types of things. And now I think, you know, we realize that, okay, well, we need to have this technology. It needs to be functioning. It needs to be secure. It needs to be robust and scalable. And again, it's not just a nice to have. And so I think that's the bulk of the business that I'm seeing probably in the second half of this year, is organizations who realize that they rely on this now much more deeply than they did in the past. So they're looking at replacing, aging infrastructure. They're looking at implementing solutions that are more seamless and transparent or offer additional capabilities. Mm-hmm. So one of the important things that I'm seeing today with new business is that they may have a VPN solution, and it might be a solid one, mm-hmm. One that's seamless and transparent, always on, those types of things. But at the end of the day, they lack the visibility and control that they need. When these clients were in the building sitting at their desk at their cubicle, then, you know, the full force of the enterprise IT architecture was there to protect them. All of the authentication, all of the access control, traffic inspection, everything with our super monster next gen firewalls and all of the cool capabilities that we've bought. And now they go out into the field and they have just this laptop that's on the internet and they're connected to the corpnet.
Right.
And so they realize that, well, we don't know what they're doing. We don't know if they're updated. Are they visiting the bad sites? Have they been compromised? This is a huge blind spot.
That's interesting.
And many technologies, and I'll be honest with you, the Microsoft stack is particularly challenging here, is that they offer a base kind of functionality. They'll connect you to the network. They'll authenticate you. They'll give you the access, but they don't provide a lot of the security controls. You can augment that with services from Microsoft like Azure ATP. Defender ATP has some mm-hmm. content filtering, but at the end of the day, those are additional, you know, things that have to be layered on. So I'm getting a lot of customers that are looking at, you know, their existing solutions and saying, it's functioning, but I need more from it. We have many more users, we have much more stringent, requirements, and now we need to look at that. So I think a lot of the work that I'm seeing today is around that, implementing different solutions, often third-party solutions that meet those demands for today's requirements.
That's really, I think back to, this is the upside of doing run-ans for so long, right? Do you remember network access protection? Mm-hmm. Like Microsoft made attempts to build products that when you connected to the corp net, it would inspect your machine and wouldn't give you an address until you hop through some hoops. And they largely moved away from all of that.
Yes. And in fact, if you'll recall, and certainly your listeners certainly might, if they ever use this technology, NPS, Network Policy Services, or
right.
Network Policy Server, was basically Microsoft's implementation of Radius. And it was part of the network access protection suite. And of course, they deprecated that. They removed that in Server 2016. It went away. It literally pulled it out of the product. The plumbing was removed in Windows 10, I think. So, whereas you could have used this back in the day for VPN or wireless access, they got out of that business. Microsoft yanked all that. So they removed it. So
interesting.
And again, you're absolutely right. There are some definite requirements to make sure that a device is, security posture and health meets your requirements before you allow it to connect to your network. Because obviously, if it's in poor health, you may not want it to connect, or you may want to be able to remediate before it connects. And yeah, Microsoft kind of took that away from us. And that again points to third parties. Many third party solutions that I work with offer integrated network access control. Mm-hmm. So some of the best solutions out there today have that built into their product. So as you implement the solution, not only do you allow access, and I can control access based on users or groups and the standard stuff,
yep.
but I can also enforce device health checks and determine their security posture before allowing that connection, and ultimately adjust access control based on that, right? So I could give them full access if they're healthy. Mm-hmm. I could give them limited access if they're not healthy.
Primarily, or maybe to get it's them just patched
not
up.
Maybe it's just not a domain joined device, or maybe it's not one of my managed devices.
Right.
So I'm going to limit the access.
Yeah, yeah.
You get read as opposed to full control or something like that. And ultimately, Azure is helping out there as well, because you can integrate Azure conditional access with a lot of solutions today and then gain some of that control there.
Yeah, it occurs to me that Microsoft's solution to this now is ATP Intune, but it's very cloud-centric. So if you're working on an on-prem solution, I don't think they're even interested now. Like that's not a product they're going to make.
Of course, yeah. And with the Microsoft stack native, Always on VPN does support integration with Azure Active Directory, and you can leverage conditional access policies to enforce, MFA only under specific conditions, mm-hmm. and the whole gamut of what you have access to in conditional access. So that's helpful. Where that gets more challenging is implementing that with third-party solutions. But again, many third-party solutions, certainly the better ones, and I'll throw out a name like NetMotion Mobility, which is a fantastic solution, one of the best on the market today. They have an integrated network access control that doesn't require integrating with any sort of third-party service. Essentially, it's built into their platform, and so you create those policies and define them there. So you can literally say your device must meet all of these checks in order to even establish, even if the user is authenticated and even if the device is trusted, I still want to make sure it has a level of configuration that meets my minimum requirements. And then I can make the control decisions or access control decisions based on that information.
Yeah, I would think the one thing we're missing more than anything else is that what NAP once upon did, which is when you negotiate to make a connection to CorpNet, mm-hmm. it does a health check and may force you to patch before you have access to anything. And that used to exist. But you say, like a product like NetMotion, this is something they would address.
Absolutely. And it's basically defined in policy. So NetMotion is a solution that is, again, a third party. It's a non-Microsoft solution, of mm-hmm. course. But it is a premium purpose-built enterprise VPN. And it's a solution that gives the administrator incredible control over their endpoints. So you can write a policy that says when this client connects, it must meet these requirements. I can then write policies that says if it doesn't meet those requirements, what do I want to do?
Right.
Do I want to deny access? Do I want to allow access, just pop up a message and say, hey, we have a problem with your device, contact your administrator. Right. Do I want to grant it limited access and then maybe run a program on the client side that would go out and remediate itself? Maybe there's some software that needs to be updated that I can manage programmatically, and I can actually tell the VPN software to do that. So tons of capability there that would allow you to much more proactively monitor the health of your endpoints and ensure their healthy status prior to connecting to your network.
And I'm not even thinking hostility wise. I'm thinking a laptop that's been off for a week while you were away and missed a bunch of patches. And so before anything, I mean, normally the patches happen in the background and you're off and working, but the idea that one of these patches is security critical, and so it must happen before you have access to the network. That's an interesting policy. The challenge whenever I hear policy, the immediate problem I have is I need to authenticate to even know what policies I'm supposed to have. Mm-hmm. So there's sort of that transitory period where you're kind of in a DMZ of,
sure,
I know you gave me good credentials, so I'm going to talk to you, but I'm not going to give you anything else. Not just yet. We have to check some things.
It is the border cop, no question. So we're going to look at your passport, but you can't go through just because I looked at your passport.
Right.
I want to look in your trunk.
Now we're going to go through the trunk
in the back seat.
Yeah, straighten some things up. But hey, that's the interesting element to it, and it's interesting to me also that of course the pandemic is going to reveal this, and not right away. Because it's only when the machines have been out for a while and we have gone through a few patch cycles and things like that where you're like, do I actually know the state of all the gear that everyone's working from home on now?
You bet. You bet. And interestingly, PKI presents some unique challenges there. So I, for your listening audience, I do a lot of work with PKI as well. And one of the unique challenges that we're seeing is that for high assurance PKIs, there are some physical components to that. Typically root CAs that are stored in a secured cage in a data center or in a colo, HSM or hardware security modules that are physically attached to those devices. And by the way, to unlock those requires physical access to those machines.
Right.
Meaning I have to literally put in my smart card or enter my password or half of the password while another administrator puts in their half. And by the way, if nobody's allowed to travel or if we have these restrictions, how is it do we all get to this one data center at the same time to renew these keys prior to expiration?
Right.
So there's some challenges posed there as well that we have to consider. But it is a unique challenge that's been imposed by the pandemic, for sure.
Yeah, without a doubt. And Richard, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message.
Security is the most important thing you can do to keep your company alive. But are you doing everything you can for your remote users? A recent survey showed that over 57% of businesses still have users with local admin rights. Stop them from running with the scissors and take away those admin rights. But when you do, how will you re-enable these work-from-home users to install their own printers and fonts, install some of their own applications, and bypass those pesky UAC prompts from older apps? If you've got hundreds or thousands of desktops to manage, you're going to love the superpowers of PolicyPack. Elevate standard user rights when needed, block malware and unknownware, and get out of the local admin business. PolicyPack works with both domain-joined and non-domain-joined machines. If you're letting users run with local admin rights, then it's time to get secure. Check out PolicyPack at policypack.com for real-world problem-solving demos, plus a way for you to try it out yourself. PolicyPack software, securing your standards. And as a bonus, join Jeremy Moskowitz, Richard Campbell, plus MVP Richard Hicks at the live one-day event entitled PolicyPack Lockdown 2020. Register for your limited live event seat. Come to policypack.com/lockdown. That's policypack.com/lockdown for your seat on November 19th, and we'll see you there.
And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell, and that's Richard Hicks. That's Richard M. Hicks. We don't want to mix up the Richard Hickses. And we're talking a little bit about, I guess this is really a conversation about, what the pandemic has taught us about enterprise mobility now for an awful lot of folks. Because if you were already a mobile company, and I've talked to a few like this, you weren't that much impacted. But you talked about this in the previous show we did around the VPN, where lots of people had pilot projects. They had 20 people on. And suddenly now it's like, everybody needs to be on this. And you quickly figure out, that the POC was not enough, that there are the things are very different when you have to take it to scale.
Absolutely. And this goes back to the mobility is not a luxury anymore statement at the outset of this this podcast, is that a lot of infrastructure was designed for a subset of the employee base, right? So we're a company of 5,000 people. I only have a few hundred people that need this. I'm going to scale it for about 500. Everybody goes home. Everybody has to work. And now all of a sudden we don't have enough capacity, or we didn't plan for an outage. We didn't plan for what happens in a failover scenario.
Right.
I have two VPN servers. It supports all 500, but when one goes down, the other one won't support all of them. So it goes down too. So there's a lot of things that were challenging
that,
there.
That rolling tip over. I also could imagine, the same thing with like the naps and areas we were just talking about needing patches. There are mechanisms you built that just generate a ticket, which is fine when it's a pilot and there's only a dozen or so that are going to come in any given day. When it's the whole company, generating tickets is not a good answer. Like, you want self-service, you want remediation now, because you're going to just get buried.
You bet. And again, this is another area that an intelligent VPN solution can help you with. Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest challenges that I've seen over the last 6 months to a year, and maybe even before that, prior to COVID as well, is enterprise organizations implementing VPN solutions and then having issues with password resets. So I can't tell you how many projects that I have done purely because someone implemented self-service password reset and then had problems after the fact with their mobile workforce. Case in point, a customer I was working with last year implemented SSPR. They pushed it out. Everybody loved it. The mobile workforce started resetting their password when they were in the field. Well, guess what happens when you log on to your laptop? Wrong password.
Right.
Right. So you log in with your old password, but now you can't log into the VPN because guess what? The VPN has a different password on the back end. So there was this password sync issue that was really, really problematic.
Oh, man.
And so I have done a number of deployments purely off the back of someone's SSPR deployment that failed, but ultimately they didn't account for that very specific use case. So implementing a solution that provides pre-connectivity or pre-logon connectivity is vital if you have domain joined devices that are in the field. If you're doing SSPR, you need to accommodate that. And essentially what that does, Richard, is it means that when I log on to the device, I have connectivity to a domain controller to process that password change. So meaning when I log on with my new password, it is not the same as my cache credentials, of course, which is fine because if I have access to a domain controller, it just simply goes out to the DC, says, yep, you do have a new password. Boom, here you go. We'll recache it. You log on, your VPN starts, your user-based VPN starts. But that's really been a tremendous benefit to a lot of my large enterprise customers who've implemented those solutions is having a solution that supports that capability.
Is that always a post facto recovery? Like, you have to change the password in one place and then get it to the other place? Or is it just a mistake in the self-service password reset that it should sync them at the same time?
Well, again, the challenge here is that you've changed the password via self-service password reset. And let's say you do that, and then it syncs back to on-prem, and the domain controllers have your new password.
Great.
The real challenge there is when you're logging on without cache with cache credentials, then if you try to log on with your new password, that obviously
isn't
going
to
work.
So the challenge here is that cache needs to die, right?
Exactly. And if you've forgotten your password, you don't know what your password is, right? So then I can't log on with something else. If you do remember your old password, that's great. You can log on with your old password, but then your VPN won't launch because it has the wrong password.
Right.
And then you have to supply that. So it just becomes problematic. There's a number of challenges there. Having some sort of connectivity prior to log on is huge because then all of that kind of goes away.
So what's the solution now? Like, I'm only using Office 365 for the password changing things, and that's worked just fine for me.
But absolutely.
I got to imagine people have different infrastructures here, and that synchronization is really challenging.
Specifically, what we're talking about is organizations that have an on-premises Active Directory and then are synchronizing with the cloud. So you're connected with Azure AD. Mm-hmm. So the source repository, if you will, is on-premises AD. It's synchronized to Azure AD. I do a self-service password reset to Azure AD. Maybe that's written back down to on-prem AD, or an administrator just simply using ADA, Active Directory users' computers. Maybe they reset a password on-premises. And now the user in the field has a device with a cache credential that is out of sync with on-premises.
Right.
And the solution to that is having connectivity to a domain controller when a user is in the field prior to logon.
Okay.
So that's how that's basically what happens is this is no different than a user sitting at their desk in the building. They type in their password. It's not their cache credential. So when that happens, when you type in your password, that is doesn't match your cache credential. If a domain controller is available, your password is sent to the domain controller. Then it is authenticated. And if it's correct, of course, now you cache the new password locally and you log on. A user would never notice that in the building.
No.
But outside of the building, when they don't have access to that domain controller, that's when the problem occurs.
And does something like always on VPN just compensate for this because you do have that sort of ambient connection going on?
Absolutely. So Always On VPN does support the device tunnel, which is essentially a VPN connection for the device or the machine as opposed to the user.
Right.
And that way, when you log on and you're looking at a logon prompt and you're in the field, your machine is already connected and has access to domain controllers to process a logon. So it not only streamlines self-service password resets or even administrator password resets, but it also supports things like logging on without cache credentials. And then, of course, as Mike Niehaus was on your show earlier this year talking about, I'm certain about Autopilot. This is going to be really tremendously beneficial for solutions like Autopilot, because when you send a laptop in the field and you expect to join them to the domain and do Azure hybrid Azure AD join, you need, or at least prior to Always On VPN, you had to have domain connectivity. So you couldn't really do this in the field.
Right.
Now it supports the Always On VPN device tunnel, which means you can do a hybrid Azure AD join with Autopilot completely remote. And the domain controller connectivity that is required is provided by Always On VPN.
It's a subtlety of the VPN model to recognize it's not just one connection, that it's different credentials and different connections at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And again, in this model, essentially what we're doing is authenticating the device. So the device has to have a certificate. The VPN infrastructure has to accept that certificate for authentication. And then once that's established, then the device has access to the domain and can do anything that you would do when you were in the building, in the four walls of the building.
Right.
Which means join the domain, talk to SCCM, go out and do a hybrid Azure AD join, and you can do this anywhere in the world.
The same way we always have done in Active Directory, you have both the user and the computer. This is just the computer's credentials, and they don't have access to file shares and stuff per se. You know, they're not a user, but they do have access to the services they need to maintain the machine.
Correct. Yeah. And in this case, we just authenticate the principal using its device certificate as opposed to in Always On VPN anyway. In Direct Access, for your listeners who have Direct Access installed, Direct Access uses the certificate, the device certificate, as well as its computer account.
Right.
In Active Directory, Always On VPN just uses that device certificate, but principally it's the same. It's the same functionality.
And Direct Access is the old way. Always On is the new way.
Correct. Direct Access is really considered legacy today.
Yeah,
reason for that is because it is exclusively an on-premises Active Directory domain join solution.
Right.
Servers had to be domain join. Clients had to be domain join. And of course, you know as well as I do, Microsoft is not really interested in continuing the promotion of on-premises anything at this point.
Yeah.
Everything's cloud. So they needed a solution that was going to support Azure and Active Directory.
Yeah. And its early demands for IPv6 were non-trivial back when that was hard too. But I totally get you that Microsoft's a cloud company now. And so the cloud has to be the absolute, not just an option, but the focal point, for better or worse, everything they're going to make.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know folks that got Direct Access to work are very frustrated with, hey, I just got this figured out and now it's what?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But, there's nothing wrong with Always On either. Then, and that just sort of mindset of transparent VPN that you have this kind of, this secure connectivity back to the office is always compelling. Well, What other things have you really learned in this past few months that folks should probably know about? I mean, I appreciate that mobile's not optional anymore. The scale of connectivity, keeping your machines maintained, and we're probably going to need more software around that. Any other key points? Because I really appreciate them.
So I am glad you asked that, because one of the most critical things that we learned probably over the last 6 months mm-hmm. is that VPN forced tunneling in today's cloud-based world is pointless.
Yeah.
And let me explain. So when the world shifted and everybody went home, there were many of my customers, and I'm sure many more in the world that I don't work with directly, who were using forced tunneling for VPN. And I'll be honest with you, forced tunneling is really an antiquated notion basis in the 90s, I think.
But, was it ever a good idea? I don't know that it was.
Yeah, I you could argue that, right? But this is it really is old school and legacy think, to be honest with you. But again, sometimes an organization will have a security policy that's drafted and it's not been reviewed in hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. And it will say something to the effect that any VPN must be forced tunneled, right? We don't allow split tunneling, blah, blah, blah.
The point being, all traffic goes through the VPN and then out from there.
Correct. Yes. And for those who might not be familiar with that, forced tunneling is a mode that when you connect the VPN, all traffic, including internet traffic, would mm-hmm. go over the VPN tunnel. Now, the idea and the concept is one that I don't necessarily argue with. In other words, those that would argue in favor of a forced tunneling solution would state, I need visibility and control over this traffic for going out to the internet. So I want to backhaul that over the VPN and have that egress on premises and go through my security control and my enforcement. So my next-gen firewalls, my content inspection, what have you. Again, certainly laudable, totally understand that. The problem is that the cure is worse than the disease in this point, right? And so what you find is that the user experience is extremely poor. And by the way, it's not just for, internet browsing. Today, we have so many services that are available as cloud services. A lot of applications and Office 365 being, the behemoth there, but countless other Salesforce and what have you, all online. Forcing all that traffic over the tunnel is just really challenging and quite problematic. So first of all, you have suboptical network paths, right? Mm-hmm. So you've short-circuited every CDN that was designed to streamline performance, right? So now all the traffic appears to coming from wherever your data center is, which is never going to be good. We've added a layer of encryption and encapsulation, which increases protocol overhead. So now you have fragmentation, you've introduced latency. By the way, almost everything today is encrypted in some fashion. And so now you're encrypting that again with the VPN. So that is a heavy, heavy burden. Mm-hmm. A lot of encapsulation and decapsulation, a lot of encryption and decryption happening on the client and the server. And it's just not really a good idea. And as a matter of fact, Microsoft, shortly after the March COVID shutdowns, started publishing documentation saying, hey, listen, not a good idea to use forced tunneling. We recommend using split tunneling. And then they actually produced some guidance for customers who, hey, if you absolutely have to use forced tunneling, if you can't get around that in your organization for whatever reason, mm-hmm. then Always On VPN supports forced tunneling with exceptions or with exclusions. And Microsoft produced some guidance to basically say, hey, here's your forced tunnel, but here's a way to break out all of the Office 365 traffic.
Right.
And it's not a real elegant solution. I think it's a stopgap solution. It's one that works. The problem is, of course, that with Always On VPN, all of this is done by IPv4 addresses. Mm-hmm. So first of all, those IP addresses in the cloud are going to change. They're always dynamic. So they can give you an idea of what they are now, but that's going to change. And then, of course, having to manage an infrastructure where you have to manage the VPN access policy to allow those IP addresses. And if Microsoft changes them, then you either face some potential outages, or if you don't update them timely enough, or, you know, if you don't update them all, eventually it's going to stop working. There are some services that you can use, and I'd mentioned NetMotion Mobility prior to this, has a really cool feature that allows you to create a host group and essentially populate that programmatically with those IP addresses. Those IP addresses from Microsoft are available, again, programmatically. You can get that as JSON output. So, and they have a tool that essentially can do that for you dynamically. Now, that to me is still a workaround. My suggestion to my customers is consider split tunneling, because that is much more efficient and much more effective. In other words, only send the traffic that's destined for your on-premises network over the VPN tunnel. Send everything else out the internet. But for visibility and control, consider other solutions. Defender ATP now includes web content filtering, and there's logging as well. So you have visibility and control there. There are a variety of third-party solutions. And again, I apologize if I sound like a NetMotion software salesman here, but NetMotion does have its own content filtering built in as well. So they have, with the newest release, version 12, which just came out, they have the ability to write policy that says you can't access, bad sites or command and control or security risk sites and things like that. So, and other solutions as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, Cisco, Palo Alto do that as well. I don't want to make it exclusively a NetMotion thing. But yeah, there are a variety of other solutions that can do that. But if you're looking to stay within the Microsoft stack, be sure to enable split tunneling and integrate with Azure ATP or Defender ATP, excuse me,
right,
and take advantage of those capabilities to do that. It's a much more elegant way to meet the requirement instead of doing this kind of, really brute force all the traffic back over the VPN tunnel so we can inspect it on premises. Do it intelligently. Do it on the endpoint. You still get the visibility control. The user experience is going to be much better.
Yeah.
Your infrastructure will be much happier. It's a win-win all the way around.
I understand the need to inspect. We have a responsibility to do that. But
you bet.
Yeah, don't do it the dumb way. Use the smarter tools.
Yeah, we don't want to be blind to that. I mean, that is a huge blind spot if we don't know what's happening on the client. We need to know, is the user performing risky behavior? Are they visiting the bad sites, right? Mm-hmm. Are they downloading malicious software? Are they talking to command and control services? This doesn't have to be anything that is malicious by the user.
It could simply indicate
that, you know, this device has been compromised. Yeah. And so you're looking for those signals, right? Mm-hmm. This device is talking to known command and control signals, servers. We need to know that so that we can remediate.
Yeah. Totally sensible. And it definitely, funny is, I know we've talked about all this before, but the pandemic just brought it to the forefront. It's like, you need a solution for this now.
Without question.
Because everybody's doing it. And it does feel like these few months on now, we're sort of past the panic and saying, what don't we know? How are we now blind? How are we now vulnerable? And we can start cleaning that up and getting better at it.
You bet.
Yeah. No, very, very good insight, Rich. Thanks so much for coming back to talk about this. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.